Hi guys, Max of theaccidentalengineer.com here. I recently had the opportunity to interview Ruby Bhattacharya, a senior technical recruiter at Coinbase. We talked a bit about recruiting for engineers in the Bay Area and for startups. So if any of those topics interest you, give this interview a listen. I mean, the first question is, who are you?
Okay, so my name is Ruby Bhattacharya. I'm currently a senior technical recruiter at a company called Coinbase in San Francisco.
How long have you been at Coinbase for?
So I recently joined Coinbase and I've been there about 2 months.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been doing recruiting?
So I've been in the tech recruiting space for 15 years and I've done it in the UK. I've done recruiting in Europe and also in the US, but only in California.
So this might be a hard question to answer because it was so long ago, but how did you find your way into the recruiting space?
A little cheeky there. I was actually always fascinated with, I'd gone through a recruitment consultancy when I got my first job out of college, and I was fascinated by their job, about what they were doing, how they were matching people up. So I started out in pharmaceutical sales. I hated it, didn't want to do it. And I always thought back to that, to the people that, you know, interviewed me in the first place, the recruitment consultants. I thought, well, I should give that a shot. So then I started looking into it and interviewing and trying to get into it. And I used to sell recruiting services and do recruiting at the same time. It was like an agency model. That's where I started my recruiting career from.
So dialing forward to today at Coinbase, what is the typical day for a senior technical recruiter look like?
Okay, so you come in, you've got a stack, you've got to clear your inbox, you've got a stack of emails to deal with, mostly doing to do with people fixing their scheduling, or they need something doing, they need something answering, they need it now. And all these requests need to be answered very, very quickly. And if a candidate is emailing, you want to respond as quickly as possible. That's always first and foremost. Once that's done, it's a combination of doing phone screens, meeting candidates in person, going through their career objectives and goals, talking to a lot of people on the phone, looking at a lot of LinkedIn profiles, doing a lot of sourcing. It's a combination of quite a number of things, and you're doing the 360 recruiting lifecycle, which means, you know, you find the person in the first place, and then you see them through the whole hiring process to offer stage.
For sure.
So that's what so that's kind of the job, but in a day in the life of it can differ from day to day. Depends how many people you're interviewing, or if you're having a sourcing day and you've got your head down and you're trying to find people. So that's what it looks like, typical day.
So in contrast to the full-time type of salaried recruitment in-house role that you have, can you describe to people who might be job seeking for engineering roles the different types of recruitment pipelines they might encounter?
So the different types of people that they might encounter is you're going to encounter in-house recruiters and agency recruiters. I don't think agency recruiters, because companies can generally hire entry level and recent grads themselves, agencies don't tend to be interested in new grads. That was just generally the rule of thumb. Most of the time, what you're going to encounter is a recruiter reaching out, probably on LinkedIn or via email, and reaching out to you and trying to see if you're interested in an opportunity. If your LinkedIn profile reads correctly and it has the right keywords in there and it looks a certain way and it's polished and clean, it will get picked out from a recruiter, because you just sit there looking at hundreds of profiles. It better stand out.
In 2017, for engineering hires, what is the type of personal branding that makes candidates a highlight in your searching?
I think what makes someone good when you're doing high volume recruiting and recruiting a lot of engineers across the board, it's good to have your fingers in all pies. So it's good to be a little bit of everything. It's good to force yourself to be full stack even, or just force yourself. Because that way you are valuable in many different areas. And a hiring manager can see, oh, you've done a bit of front end. I can put him on this, him or her on this, or actually we can change and put him on the back end, him or her on the back end. But the thing is, having that flexibility to do both sides and to have, you know, a couple, few languages under your belt that you're comfortable with, just having that breadth, that helps the employer be able to place you in the right role.
Mm-hmm. In 2017, with the types of engineering hires that you're looking for, what is the type of personal branding or distinguishing things people can do, whether on LinkedIn or otherwise?
So for personal branding, which is an excellent thing to be considering nowadays because of social media, because we're everywhere and recruiters are looking at people everywhere, you want to make sure you clean up your Twitter, your Facebook, your GitHub, wherever you have some kind of online presence. Maybe even put up a website about yourself. The more you have, the more passionate it actually makes you look, because you're trying to get yourself out there everywhere. You're putting your code out there. You're putting this about me page or a website with some of your best work on there, or side projects that you like to do. People love side projects. Twitter. Get on Twitter, start tweeting some stuff, start following some people, start getting, just because, you know, what recruiters do is we look at the number of followers you have on your Twitter feed. So think about that next time, the kind of articles you're posting. And again, on LinkedIn, we look at patents, we look at extra projects that people have done, we go right down to the bottom, check all of that stuff. So if you have nothing there and it's just a hardly filled in LinkedIn page, and nothing on your GitHub apart from that you have an account, you know, it's not going to work. You're not going to stand out. The person that stands out to me who has all those bases covered, who has some activity in their GitHub, doesn't have to be crazy. Their Twitter's up to date. They tweet about stuff that's important that they're passionate about. And I want them to be tweeting about programming. Of course I do.
What types of skills and curriculum for graduate programs are areas of unmet demand at Coinbase engineering-wise?
I don't think there's a specific language or a specific something that you could learn. Of course, keep up to date with everything. But I think it's the length and breadth of what you know. Like I mentioned earlier, is have a few languages under your belt. You know, be known that you can do things in a few different things. Be seen that you haven't just, you know, specialized in one tiny little area, that you can do a breadth of things. Because what a company wants when you employ an entry-level person is that they're going to have, you can slot them in somewhere and get their foot in the rung while, you know, while their career develops. Because people will always have opportunities to do what they want to do. And you've got to get your foot in the rung somewhere. But having that broad set of skills means that you'll find it much easier to hire you.
So what specifically does the schedule look like from a candidate being reached out to or inbound applying to?
So the way that the hiring process generally works at most startups, Coinbase has a different style of technical interviewing. We start off with a technical phone screen. We start off with a recruiter phone screen where we talk you through what you want to do, where you want to be, that kind of thing. If you pass the recruiter screen, you get through to the technical phone screen. That's all technical. So you probably go on a Google Hangout for an hour and do a coding challenge with one of the engineers. If you pass the technical coding challenge, you then are invited to come on site to do an on-site coding challenge and an on-site architecture challenge. If you pass that, then you're given a take-home challenge and you're asked to come back and do pair programming full day. And then, so that can cover, you can do that fairly quickly, but that's probably a 2-3 week process almost. So don't worry about that happening, and don't worry about companies doing these technical assessments. They're doing them for a reason. You know, they need, like, certain companies like Coinbase have an incredibly high bar. They want to make sure that everyone comes through the door can code in a certain type of way. And most companies have that. You know, a certain style that they want as well. So always expect, I'd get used to doing those kinds of interviews where you have to do it online or, they're not the best. Technical phone screens are probably the worst ones to do. It's hard to really, know what someone's asking, and then you've got paper and you're trying to work it out. And I understand it's difficult, but that's generally how the process goes. a few tips. A really, really noticeable thing that happens, and most startup CEOs love this and like this and will pass your resume on if you do this. If you write a well thought out letter, if you really want to join a company and you really want to be there, write a well thought out email and send it to the CEO, right? And send it to the CEO and attach your resume. I'd be really surprised if that CEO did not pass on your resume to the talent team. I'd be really shocked.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it happens every single time. Our CEO, whatever the level person, they're always referred to us. So we always look over them and we see them first.
I think this is welcome advice because I know of a lot of people who are in the early years of their software engineering careers or just come out of boot camps and they go through job sites versus thinking about it as a sales job. They're selling themselves.
Yeah.
And some people are a lot more timid than others about doing stuff like emailing a CEO. Many people, probably the majority of people, have never emailed a CEO before. So that advice is that advice is gold because you'll definitely stand out. I think one topic I know that people are in, especially in the Bay Area, talking about compensation and cost of living in that area. What has been the general trend of candidates you've seen who've gotten to the offer stage and their general literacy with what types of compensation you guys have offered? Do you find a lot of candidates that don't know what options are or...
Yeah, definitely. When people come in, mostly entry-level people, if it's the first job, first sort of computer science job that they're ever doing, they probably won't understand about what the equity means and equity compared to salary. Equity compared to salary can mean different things in different companies. You know, at a tiny company, being given a, you know, a huge share in a tiny company where the stocks mean nothing, I don't know, it's different than a larger company who have actually got prices, they're valued at something, and their stock is actually worth more. You got to weigh up things like that. You want to weigh up, do you want to get paid out big time because you're onto a winning company and therefore take a lot more equity than salary? It's completely up to you. But I would get the company, when you're talking to someone through the interview process, once it's getting through the final stages, I would request that have someone talk you through, you know, what their equity is like and what they're doing and how it vests, and just get someone to explain that to you.
What is the career like of an internal in-house salaried recruiter? Do you get similar type of proportion of cash versus equity with respect to other employees, or is it more of a sales role?
No, it's not a sales role. So we're fully salaried employees. We don't get bonuses or we don't get commissioned for hiring extra people. It's just fully salaried. We're also on equity as well. As if you're an early employee at any company, most employees get a certain amount. Obviously, engineers get a larger proportion of that. But yeah, as a technical recruiter on the team, yes, I've got skin in the game.
Got it. I think that's a question that a lot of people have about contract recruiters is what questions to answer of theirs, how much should be said to the contract recruiter versus your point of contact with the employer. So I think it's a topic that a lot of people are curious about.
That's a very good question, Matt, but how do you know if they're a contract recruiter and they're not a full-time one? It depends if they identify themselves as that.
Yeah.
Because if you're talking to me, for example, you know, it does you good telling me what your thoughts are, telling me what you want to do, telling me that you're thinking about this salary, but because I will actually give you advice. Because if you're overshooting the ball and wanting some ridiculous salary and you don't have the experience, I'll tell you, hey, you're shooting high, you'll never get that anywhere. But if you go for this salary, you're probably going to. I mean, I maybe to my own fault, but I always want people to have a salary that they're really happy with, that's slightly more than they asked for. You know, to put a smile on their face, you know, that's more likely what recruiters are doing. If you're dealing with a contract recruiter or an agency recruiter, just be wary.
This topic has come up in the news recent times with employers asking applicants what their current salaries are. Is this a practice that you think is a good idea? Do you think...
As a recruiter, as a recruiter, it's absolutely essential that I know your current salary. It's absolutely essential that I know what you're looking for as well. If you give me a salary that is unrealistic and it's too high, I'm going to be like, well, the guy or girl doesn't even know what he or she is worth. So, well, they're out of the picture anyway, because mm-hmm. they didn't know. So you've got to come up with something that's of worth. But I have to know what it is. I have to know what you want. Otherwise, I'm going to come back with a figure that could be insulting. It could be like 50K under what you wanted when I didn't know what you wanted was over. So don't be shy about telling people. Tell people exactly what the compensation you're on. But don't be cocky about it.
What do you think about candidates coming from graduate programs with PhDs who may never have had a full salary, but rather just a very small annual stipend? How do you think they should approach that question, or is it a non-issue?
I think it should be a non-issue. If you're a graduate, if you just come out of school, don't even.
How do you feel about candidates who decline vigorously to give their current compensation when asked?
I'm going to be suspicious about why. Mm-hmm. I want to know why, because why wouldn't you tell me? Mm-hmm. Do you want me to give you a bad offer? Because if you don't tell me, I'm going to give you a bad offer. I'm going to have to pick something out of the air. Think, well, I don't know. He might want 180 or he might want 120. I know. Why don't we give him 120? He didn't say what he wanted. I'll give him 120.
Do in-house recruiters coordinate contract engineers? Or what have you seen of employers taking on contract work? Or contract workers?
I think in startups, generally, they do take on some contractors to do work. Generally, it tends to be the managers that do that. And they tend to hire, they're not going to hire new grads for that. Because mm-hmm. what they need is someone that needs no supervision, hardly anyone, any interference, and can get on with the job. And it takes a certain mindset to do that. You know, you want to get a good, solid number of years under your belt before you try do contracting. And it's not for everybody. And it's a hustle all the way. You got to find your next gig. You need to find your next gig. And it needs to be paying the same. And you better hope that there's no recession coming, because then everything hits the fan at that point. You know, so contracting has its own set of dangers, but it has its own set of freedoms too. Obviously, you can come and go as you please. You can pick the length of contract. But you have to be really good at what you're doing to be able to prove yourself time and time again. You're only as good as your last job. Mm-hmm.
How much does poor communication harm candidates in the application process? That could be having to reschedule. That could be poor grammar, hurried looking emails, that sort of thing.
I think mistakes that candidates can make is either over-ringing, over-calling, over-emailing. Like, and if a recruiter's told you how long it's going to take, then that's how long it's going to take. Don't keep bugging. Communication, you want to have good, clear communication with your point of contact. Generally, in larger companies, your point of contact is going to be the recruiter. Don't be rude to them. They're actually your champion pushing you through the whole process. So, you know, make sure that they understand. And this is a person you can actually talk to. Most good companies, this is someone you can trust and you can talk to. And they'll help you through the process. And if you're nice to them, they're going to give you some hints and tips about the whole interview process and be able to prep you for it. Because if you haven't built rapport with that person, why would they tell you anything?
Yeah,
I have often told people who've I've got great rapport with, I'll tell them what goes on in the process, because I can't make someone pass an interview, but I can tell them what goes on in it so that they have a fairly good chance of being able to pick up what they need to do in order to pass through. Poor grammar, yeah. Well, it depends what recruiter you're dealing with. You could be dealing with someone who's really particular about that kind of thing. But we generally let it go for software engineers a little bit, because that's not what you're doing. You're not writing emails. You know, it's not unless it's a role where you're developing into, where you do have to, you know, communicate with cross-functional teams and all that. If that's the job, then you should have very good written and verbal communication skills. Yes.
So if you guys enjoyed that interview, don't forget to like or subscribe. If you have questions that you wish I'd ask, feel free to comment below. or suggestions of people you would like me to interview next. Hope to see you guys soon. Bye.